Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community.
All right, so let's kick this thing off, huh?
Yeah, let's dive right in here. So, guests today, we got Brooke Glover. You're the majority owner of Swell Dog?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a pretty exciting company. What was your impetus to open a brewery of that type, or a distillery, I'm sorry?
Yeah, well, we're a cidery and a distillery, so we are multifaceted there. But, you know, we started with the cidery, and really it was because we couldn't find the type of products that we enjoyed out on the market. And just to what you said, Aaron, just there was a need in the state and that wasn't being filled. And we thought, hey, we can fill that, I think. And we were making it already and our family was enjoying it. And it started to be a thing, hey, this is pretty good. I think we can do this. So, I had another job and we kind of all bootstrapped it as a family for a long time until we just couldn't do it anymore. And we, you know, I said, well, okay, we're making it. I'm going to start selling it. And then it just very quickly, we realized we weren't going to be able to self-distribute. We realized that we were going to have to up our game because people were saying yes. And that's, I think we were getting that response from the people of West Virginia. We were getting that response from the retailers and that were really, I guess, excited to get behind a West Virginia brand. And
Brooke, you mentioned recognizing the need. Now, I wouldn't have recognized that need. What was the need that you recognized?
Well, if you look at the state of West Virginia, there's one cidery. There was one cidery before we started, and it was Hock Knob Heart Cider. And they were in bottles at the time. And so when you're looking on the shelf, you're seeing major national brands, your Angry Orchard, your Woodchucks, your Strongbows, you're not seeing anything local. And that movement was really happening, had happened a lot with the craft beer industry. And so we decided, hey, that we could do that regional play. We could be that regional player there. And especially for spirits, that has started to take off. Regional spirits are taking off. People are really looking to support local a lot.
Absolutely,
more.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually found out about you guys. I was down at Seneca Rocks and stopped at a little corner mart there. I can't remember the name of that place.
But Yoakum's.
Yoakum's, yeah.
You That's run right. One.
Yep. Big display down there. So I grabbed some of the cider and it's quite tasty. I think it was was it pear? Is that
probably the winter pear.
Winter, yeah.
You should have come to our tasting room. We were right on the other side of the mountain.
Well, so. I didn't know that at the time. Otherwise, I would have.
Yeah.
I tried to go to Smoke Hole, but they were closed up for the season. So.
Yeah, Smoke Hole. We get a lot of visitors from Smoke Hole, actually.
Yeah, no doubt.
There's nothing else to do here. And so they just kind of wander down the road and then all of a sudden our tasting room is full.
Yeah. So you're there in the shadow of the Seneca area right there?
Mm-hmm.
What county are you in?
So we're Seneca Mountains in Pendleton County. So where Seneca Rocks are located, we're right on the backside of that mountain. So pretty much just the crow flies, as they say. We're about 3 miles, but if you have to drive the road, you have to go all the way around to Franklin and then all the way back around. So it's quite a drive, but if you were to hike it, it wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, right on. I've often said the Potomac Highlands is my favorite part of the state, you know, visually and just to be in, I just really, really like that area.
You know, and it's gorgeous. The area where we are, we're down in a valley and it's the driest point east of the Mississippi. And so it's got all these really cool characteristics in the soil and just the terroir that we are taking advantage of with our apples and with the corn. That's a lot different than any other place you're going to find in the state and any other place on the East Coast for that matter.
Awesome. Now you use a word there I haven't heard before. What was that word?
Terroir. It's used mostly a lot in wine, but it's used to describe kind of the quality of the land. And the soil and the nutrients that are there and just the things that make the soil what it is and make it special, because you're going to get different soil and different temperature and different things that go into your crops, depending on where they are. And it can be different from that valley and that slope over there on that side of the the valley to that slope. It could be different with the way the sun hits it, things like that. So it's really special in that area.
That's
you see
great,
a lot with Napa.
I love learning new terms like that. That's fantastic. And, you know, I see the root there with the terra being the earth and yeah, pretty neat. That's right.
Definitely. Yeah. So outside of building your own company and brand, you're also doing a lot in the industry as a whole to kind of help build that up and change the direction of that. I noticed that you sit on the board of the American Cider Association, as well as doing a lot with like the Craft Modernization Act. Can you dive into both of those a little bit? Yeah.
It's been a labor of love. It's volunteer work. And so it's been to try to push the industry forward. And I wanted to make a difference and come in. I've never missed a board meeting in my 4 years that I've been there, and I'm now the vice president. So there's a lot that comes with it. The cider industry doesn't quite get the respect that a lot of other industries do. We're a small piece of that industry. So I really felt that there was a lot I could bring to the table just from thinking of it. Yes, we're a nonprofit, but we operate as a nonprofit, but we really needed to think of it from a business perspective and figure out how we can grow this industry. How can we can affect the industry as a whole and not just, hey, let's help out, you know, this individual producer in New York. That's important. But how can we communicate with distributors and retailers, and so that we can get a little bit of play on the shelf? That's where we're going to make a lot of difference. So that's been something that I've tried to focus on as far as getting data out to our members and thinking a little bit more like how beer and wine and spirits think. We can think the same way. We just don't have as good a publicity some of those other industries. And then for Discus, I serve on the, I've just now started serving on the sustainability counselor for Discus, which is the spirits industry, one of the big groups for the spirits industry. So I'm trying to also do a lot of work on the spirit side as well.
Wow, that's impressive. So what all does the American Cider Association do? How do they impact the industry?
We really are a group for our members. It's just a way for us all to get together. We do a lot of legislative work. So I spent a lot of time lobbying and really trying to talk to different lawmakers and explain to them why we need some of these things. Because if you look at some of the other industries like wine, beer, they've got huge dollars and huge pockets, and they spend a lot on lobbying. And so cider really, you know, we have to pay a tax just if we want to add carbonation to ciders over a certain alcohol percentage, we get taxed higher. And a lot of that is because the wine lobbyists, they're starting to help to get on board a little bit with that, but it's really just some antiquated laws, some unfair laws, and trying to get some parity there. So that's one of the biggest things that we do at the Cider Association is try to advocate for our members and give them access to information that they wouldn't normally have.
So that's kind of what that Craft Modernization Act is that helping?
That was federal. So the great thing about that is everyone from the industry came together. There wasn't an industry that was fighting that on the alcohol side. And it's just a huge industry in our country. So we were on the same team. I got to go, and that was hard for me. I still remember the time when I was lobbying, I was still breastfeeding my daughter. So I was walking around with my pump and had to go into a senator's office, and I'd be like, hold on, you know, Senator Capito's office, hold on, Senator Manchin's office, you know, so they were really great about that, but it was a fun time. But we got it passed, and it's been passed permanently. So we won't have to do that lobbying every year now.
So Brooke, let me ask you something real quick. You know, I'm of a certain age now, you know, so when I was younger and, you know, drinking a little bit, there wasn't this cider thing really wasn't around. At least you didn't see it much. If it was, it, you know, might be. And it certainly wasn't around here when I was a younger guy. And so how was the industry grown? And how much growth do you see coming still yet? Is there a lot of upward mobility still in this? You think there's a lot of market share out there still for this?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, we just don't have very good publicists. We don't have the marketing dollars that big beer has, or, you know, wine Gallo has, or something like that. We only have really one big national player, and that's Angry Orchard. Uh-huh. So if they're not spending money on advertising, that really hurts the whole industry. So, you know, I think that the industry has a lot of room to grow. It's really growing regionally. So smaller players like us that are growing and taking over a region, that you're seeing a lot of that, taking a lot of market share away from the national brands, but that's not really where we're focused. We want to focus on letting other people try it and having people who are, I'm kind of, my tastes are changing a little bit. I'm moving away maybe from beer or things like that. They want to move into other industries and see what else is out there. Cider is one of those things where it's made from apples. It's just like wine, but made from apples. Mm-hmm. So people just, and everybody thinks it has all this sugar in it, and it just doesn't. A lot of the cider that's out there, what you find on the shelf does have a lot of those qualities to it. So we're seeing the retailers, the big grocers are really starting to get on board with that movement, and they're starting to put those things on the shelf. So as long as we're getting that play, as long as the consumers are saying, hey, I really like this, they're telling their friends, we're having to do a lot of guerrilla marketing to try to get the word out, but it's working. So there's a lot of room for growth there.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. So apart from your company, which we'll get back to, I wanted to touch on your being a judge at the World Whiskey Awards. It's kind of like the Olympics of whiskey, right?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you get that?
It was really cool. Well, I don't know.
Where was that held at?
I don't know.
Was that in Scotland?
They usually do it in London.
Oh, London. Okay.
But they do a judging. They did a North American judging. So it was in DC. And I didn't get to go to London for the awards, which I was really bummed about, because we actually got some really big news there. We got a gold medal. So also a silver medal. So in the non-Kentucky small batch bourbon category, we actually got a gold medal. There was only one given and we got it. There was one that beat us and was the category winner. It was a Widow Jane. So a 10-year Widow Jane, but that gave us just a lot of credibility that we know what we're doing a little bit. And so that was really cool. I got to sit with some master distillers from some really big distilleries that spent a lot of time with me. And I got to hear how their brain was working and what they were thinking about this specific thing. And I said, there was one where I was kind of insistent. I said, I don't know what you guys think about this, but I'm getting potatoes, like fresh out of the ground potatoes. And the distiller's like, yeah, I'm actually getting that now that you say that too. And so some of that was giving me the confidence to say, no, this is what I'm getting on my palate. And I'm sorry, but that's what I get. And then part of it was saying, I'm not really picking up on that note. And then when someone would mention it, they kind of give me a little bit of training and say, well, look for this. And I would get it, and I genuinely get it. I wasn't just saying, yeah, I get it. I mean, there was no ego involved. They were just very kind with giving me feedback and taking feedback. And it was just a really great give and take. It was amazing.
How long is that process? Cause it would seem like if you had like sampled 3 or 4, it kind of, your tongue would kind of get a little bit numb.
You're
to
the not
taste.
Kidding. It's one of those things where everyone's like, this is the greatest thing ever. And then you get into your like third round of samples. You're like, yeah, just right. Need a little bit of a break here. So it was like, when are we doing lunch? But you have to really stop. And it was a whole day. So I think we ended up doing like 5 rounds or something, 5 rounds of 4 or 5.
Wow.
And you have to just in between, to be fair, as a judge, for me, I had to kind of stop sometimes and get up, walk around the room,
sober up a little bit, right? You just got to sober up a little bit at this point in time.
Well, the tough thing that everyone, you don't get to drink because you're drinking so much, you have to spit it all out. So I'm like, this is the worst. Oh. And so you really don't get to fully enjoy a lot of it. Like you said, now towards the end of the day, you're like, all right, I've only got a little bit of time left here. So
that's right. Things really loosen up just a little bit.
Yeah. You had to kind of go. And then after lunch was the worst. You had to come back and try to figure out, all right, what am I doing again? And kind of get back into it. So it was great though.
Hey, let's take a break and check out this week's community moment. From their famous appetizers to signature dishes, Stefano's of Morgantown has a seasonally changing menu to ensure the best fine dining in Morgantown. Their reputation is upheld by unwavering commitment to customer service and satisfaction, an Italian tradition like no other. Follow Stefano's on Facebook to keep up with their seasonal dishes, their Wine Wednesdays, cocktail specials, and other news at their restaurant. And guess what, guys? They're community podcast approved. And remember, reservations are recommended, so call ahead.
Fairmont, make some noise out there. You guys ready?
Palatine Park is ready. They're ready to rock and roll all summer long. the best bands that are up and coming, local musicians, a diverse choice of talents. Palatine Park gives a perfect family-friendly atmosphere. All events are free to the public, so check out the event schedule to see what's coming up. See everyone this summer.
I'm really taken by your enthusiasm and what you do, and I'm genuinely curious about what your journey was like to where you're at now. You came to WVU, so are you from West Virginia originally?
I am. I'm from Parkersburg.
Okay, from Parkersburg, and so you came over here to WVU like many people did, and came over to WVU. Tell me a little bit about what you studied, and tell me just take me along your trip that ended you up here, because I'm a little bit mystified as to what your journey was and how you kind of ended up where you're at.
Yeah, and I'll be quick, but I decided I want to go to WVU to play volleyball, and so that was great, and obviously for the academics as well, and got up there and I studied communication studies, and I was considering a few different avenues, law school being one of them, and then I really decided I do love education, so I got my master's degree in educational psychology. And so I had that master's degree. I got recruited at United Bank and worked there for a while. And then I worked at a technology company, and now I make booze. So
what really timeline?
So it's like communication, educational psychology, banking, technology, booze.
But where did you start getting into this idea? I mean, there's a lot of chemistry involved. This is not something you just do in the back of your house real quick. Like one day you decide I'm going to distill liquor. I mean, there's specific equipment and recipes, and there's a lot of knowledge that goes into this. How did you gain that, and how did you kind of experiment and do this? Were you like, just I can't make it to the liquor store, I'll just learn how to make my own, or what drove you?
Part of it was just that love of travel. And so going to Napa and it really started with wine and kind of getting out of that, I'm drinking Bud Light kind of stage in my life, which was, I may have had one of those or two at WVU, or a Natty Light. I wasn't that classy. Bud Light was too classy for me, but, I really started to appreciate the craft behind it, and the makers were talking about what they were doing and how they were doing this, and how that affected the wine. And then I went to Virginia and really got to taste a lot of cider, and not the kind that you get on the shelf. It was really the bottled kind. And these places are essentially working wineries and cideries and orchards. And so you can actually see the connection to the land. And for me, that was really exciting. I grew up with a grandpa who was really kind to me and taught me a lot about nature and plants and apples. And so that was exciting to see that connection to the land. Now on the spirit side, that was something where genuinely that was because when you're in college, it's like, I'll take a crown and peach or something, and people shoot these things. And I don't know that many people who are really like, let me sit and appreciate all the nuances that go into this bourbon or this whiskey or whatever it is. And that's really where I've come to, where I thought I didn't like these things, but it was because I didn't have the kind that I liked. And so my husband, Brad, was sort of making cider, and we were like, this isn't that hard to do. And so we were like, let's make it. We enjoy it. And it just kind of snowballed from there. But now, now that I'm seeing all the, I'm actually on the trajectory to get my master, to become a master distiller. And so for me, just understanding the nuances, like you said, behind the cuts, the chemistry, and do I want to include a little more heads? I'm not going to get too technical, or do I want to include a little more tails in it, or whatever I want to do to get it the flavor that I want? That stuff all matters. And so for me, it's the excitement of actually creating something. I didn't want to work for anybody else anymore. And I really like to say, this is something that is exciting to me and creative. I always thought I wasn't this creative person because I don't love to sit and draw, but there's so many other things that can make you creative.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is a way for me to do that, and a way for our team to do that, really. I'm talking a lot about me, but really I've got an amazing team behind me and with me, not behind me. They're with me. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, what kind of capacity do you guys have? I'm sure when you first started out, you've clearly grown, I would say, and so tell me a little bit about your previous capacity and what you're capable of doing right now.
Yeah, we started in my father-in-law and mother-in-law's basically their basement. And it was just the family kind of getting together on weekends. And we would literally be pressing apples. And this was back when I was pregnant with my first daughter. And we'd just be like, huffing the apples over into the grinder and doing all of that work. And then we'd come and taste it the next, the next couple of weeks. We'd all get back together and meet, and we planted orchards and things like that. So we started out with just basically two small fermenters and a small bright tank, and then just a bunch of bottles. And we didn't have any place to put this stuff. My mother and father-in-law were just the greatest. And, let us really explore all of that. And then they were really interested in it. And so my father-in-law, because it was the house, kind of took over a lot of that cider making. But now we've moved into a 20,000 square foot facility. So we've got the majority of it is, honestly, at this point, our whole middle bay is just filled with storage for cans. That's a supply chain thing. And I doubt you want to go too much into that, but we've got the distillery on one side, and then we've got the cidery on the other side. And now we have a tasting room as well. We have quite a bit of, we have a lot of capacity as far as growth. We still have a lot of room there. The only thing we don't have there is, there's a few things that's, that are difficult about being in Upper Tract, West Virginia. One is logistics. It's next to impossible to get anything in any amount of time. You have to plan way ahead. Freight, they don't even want to come and talk. They don't even want to take your order half the time or pick something up for you or bring it to you. There's not a ton of people to pull from. So we have to really make sure that the people that we are bringing on board really understand our vision and our mission and why they're there and why they're so important to us, because they are really important to us. And so we want to make sure that we've got a great team there, but it's been kind of wild, honestly. To think about that growth.
So one of those people on your team is Kim Kirk, and it says here on your site, she's described as a level one certified cider professional. How many levels are there? What exactly does that mean?
There's two. There are two levels, and she didn't get to do level two. She was going to sit for the exam this year, but she wasn't feeling the best, so she couldn't go to CiderCon. There's a big conference, and that's one of the places you can get certified for level two. So she didn't go, and it's just really, she has all the theoretical knowledge behind cider and cider making and its history and where it came from. So she's got all of that knowledge. She just needs to do, the only thing she still has to do is the sensory portion. And then there's a little more theory for level two.
But, interesting. It's always crazy how every industry has their own little unique niches and pockets of information, education that you would never expect.
Yeah. There's almost too many. Which one's I want to know which one is the one that I need to be doing,
No doubt.
I know you've got quite a bit of what you've got to do to be a realtor is crazy.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of work, right? A lot of studying, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, there's always that like popular saying, like if you're having a whiskey or a bourbon or something like that, a lot of people put some ice in it. Some people drink it just as it is. And then some people like, oh, you need to add a little bit of water to it. There's that famous saying, it opens it up. What exactly does that mean when it says it opens it up? What's it doing to the drink?
So when you're putting that water in there, it's really getting a chance for those molecules to kind of attach, and it really just kind of makes everything kind of, it's a little bit of this. I mean, you can swirl it, it's kind of like wine when you want to swirl it. But for me, the water, and sometimes it depends on the ABV, if it's really high ABV, it just kind of gives your tongue a chance to not just get that initial sting of the alcohol, and it kind of takes it down. So if there's something that you maybe might like the flavor, but there's some sting to it, mm-hmm. something like that, you could do some drops of water. It kind of takes the ABV down, dilutes it a little bit, and then you kind of really have to worry about that burn so much. You can really take in the flavor and hit all the different, because there's a lot that happens in that first, when you take your first swig and it first hits your mouth, there's a lot that happens. But if all you're getting is that burn, then you're missing out on all those nuances. Like, is there some fruit? Because if you don't get that fruit right there in the beginning, you're kind of going to miss that fruit part of it as you taste. So that water kind of helps to tame it down a little bit and give you a chance to taste it.
Yeah. I like you said that part about like when you're introducing it, who's the famous, I don't know if he's a Glenn Levitt guy, who he is, but Peter... He's an older guy. He always puts a little in his cup, swirls it, and just tosses it over his shoulder. Then he has he says you need to have a conversation with it, like you to put in a little cup. You say, "How are you?" "Just fine, thanks." And then you find
it is. It's like a. I think they said it's like a. your first one is like just a handshake, and then your second drink's like a little bit of a hug, and then your third one's like a full embrace, and you're like, all right, now we're family, now we're together. Yeah, so that's usually by the time you take that, you're sniffing, you're kind of getting to know each other, and then by the time you actually drink your second drink, you're like, all right, we're friends now, we're getting along.
Yeah, that's right. So outside of the cider, you guys also do the spirits, so the bourbon or whiskey. Which one do you do?
We have a rye whiskey that we're actually out of. We sold out of it really fast, and we heard that we should not produce a rye whiskey, that it wasn't going to do well, and that it wasn't going to do well, especially in the state of West Virginia, and that it wouldn't be popular, and it sold like crazy.
Yeah, so, never listen to the experts.
I think the people in West Virginia were like, hey, we want this. Just nobody's giving it to us. So we decided to do that.
Yeah, I think that's become pretty popular. I hear that quite a bit these days about, you know, rye. You know, at some point in time, that was like an old guy's drink. But, you know, what's old is now new again, obviously. And so there's a trend towards the rye these days. Is that correct?
It is. There is for sure. And especially you're seeing some rye in our neck of the woods in Pennsylvania. I mean, Pennsylvania rye has always been famous in the rye world, but it's really making a comeback here. Bourbon is just having a day right now. Tequila, bourbon, and rye are really having a time. So we're taking care of the two. I can't make tequila, so I'm taking care of the rye whiskey and the bourbon right now.
Yeah, not a great climate for agave plants, right?
Right. Well, I guess I could get some agave. I could do an agave-based spirit. I can't make a tequila. I guess there's some legalities around that, but yeah. And there's a lot of people doing it. Like, I want to compete with Kendall Jenner and The Rock, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. They're doing it. I don't have a celebrity spokesperson to make this easier yet for me.
You might get Zach.
Yeah. My high profile.
I mean, are you free? What are you? We'll do it.
Yep. So another big part of our podcast, we love hearing what people do outside of their businesses, but just to give back and be involved in the community. And, you know, one of those big things that you do, you know, you have your mascot there, your dog, and then you have Lucy's Tap, and then, you know, that big thing with a big percentage of your sales going back to the community. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Really, honestly, we've been talking a lot about just the liquid. We've been talking a lot about the business and things like that, or about me, but that to me is the real reason that we started the business. And when you were kind of saying why, you know, cider, that's a different question than why did you actually go into business? And for us, it was, you know, yeah, we're making the cider and it's great, and we think we could sell this. There's a need in the market. But for us as a family, we already are this way personally, just philanthropic. We love being involved in the community and giving back. And even this weekend, I get to take my oldest daughter to a pet walk that we volunteered. It was her first volunteer experience. So it's something that we're already doing. But to have this business, it allowed us to, it allows us to not only to kind of, as we're making money, as we're bringing in money, we can give it back out, but it's to encourage our customers to know what we're doing and why it's important to us. And maybe it'll be important to them if they can hear about it, because a lot of these organizations just need a good voice. And so we thought, well, if we're trying to build our brand, might as well bring some other organizations along with us. But it's just the coolest thing that we do, and our customers love it. Our team at Soul Dog loves it. It's just like I said, it's the most important thing we do. I mean, making great ciders or ready to drink cocktails or whiskey, that's cool. But it's really cool when you know you're there's something we're getting ready to announce. We're not going to announce it yet, but that we're making a big difference. That's where it all makes it worth it for us. You're sleepy. You're away from your family and things like that, but the business side of it, I mean, that's all tough, but when you can make a difference like this, it makes it all worth it.
Right. Are there some particular areas that you donate to? I see, you know, you mentioned Lucy's Tap. Is there a tip to the spear where this is going exactly, or is it?
We focus mostly on animal charities.
On animals,
and we hadn't
right.
always, but we've really started to kind of hone in on that. And we're focusing on some brands that are some organizations that we feel align with our mission. And so we don't do anything with kids. We won't do anything that we're giving to an organization where kids might be exposed to our logo or our products. So we try to stay away from that, just because that's just ethical thing. I just don't want anything to come there. Or if we do that, it's anonymous and we won't, which we've done. We did that actually this year, something that we're very passionate about as a family, but we don't want anyone to get exposed to our brand before they're supposed to be exposed.
Makes sense.
It does make sense. And that's very conscientious of you there. You know, Philip Morris didn't really do the same thing with cigarettes. You know, it was like.
Yeah. I know there's Joe Camel and right, we've got Lucy, but we're like, we don't want to. Well, it's we have kids that come into our tasting room and we want it to be this family environment. And so we were like, we should do some coloring books with Lucy. And then we were like, we don't want to really glamorize our dog to these kids when she's our mascot for our business. So she's our mascot because of the importance of giving back and things like that. But I don't want her to be used for marketing to kids. So we stay away from that.
So obviously the name Swilled Dog, you know, how did that come about and what does that actually mean?
Everything else was taken, honestly, in the alcohol world because you can't name anything, even if there's like some weird beer up in Wisconsin that has a name that you like, you can't do it. So we just took our time and tried to find something. And actually it ended up being, I mean, we knew we wanted to do dog because it was just something that was so close to us and to our vision and mission. But swilled is a word that really means to kind of drink enthusiastically. And back in the Revolutionary War days and kind of our country's founding, when we first started having elections, they would do something called swilling the voters. And so basically whoever had the best cider, because cider was the drink of choice back then, everyone had orchards, everyone had a press, they traded cider around. That was their drink of choice. And so whoever had the best casks of cider were the ones who got elected. You had these big election day parties, and to get to the polls, you actually had to walk through these different parties. And so whoever had the best party, you kind of just scooch them right on in and sure, I'll vote for you, you know, so.
That's democracy right there. Yeah,
right on. Wouldn't it be a lot cooler if we could do that now? That would be.
It definitely would be a lot more fun, I'd say.
That would be special. I know. And, you know, I think we could do that. We should do it.
I'm all for bringing it back. I'm 100% for bringing that back. Election day is a real drag right now. Let's make it fun again.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we came up with that. It was that this was a kind of talking about history of cider, and that's really where it came from.
All right. So your dog's name is?
That's Lucy Pickles.
Where is she? Is she in here? Could she get in the shot here?
No, she's not here. I should have brought her with me.
Tell us about Lucy a little bit. What kind of dog is she?
She's a mix. She's a border collie and Australian shepherd.
That's a smart dog right there. I guarantee it. That's a smart, loving dog.
She's very smart, but she's very alert. You know, yeah. She likes to see what's going on and she's always on. She never really relaxes. Then she follows me pretty much everywhere. She's my little shadow, but she had a really tough life, really tough. She started out in a puppy mill and then just got shipped around to all these different locations. And we finally found her and adopted her from a foster. And she had a lot of issues. You know, I mean, really was, she still barks kind of, she sees a man with a hat, she'll kind of, and then she'll kind of bark, you know, she's a little bit weird with men. She was terrified of men when we first got her. And now she's fine with, you know, most guys. But really she had a lot of issues. And so we just thought, I mean, you guys know, you live in West Virginia and for us, it was, we want something, she represents this tough thing that she's gone through or this tough start that she maybe had, but she's kind of risen and now she's the face of our brand. And we're winning all these awards and people hear about it and they see our bottle and she's the face on the bottle. And I think being in West Virginia, starting an alcohol company is not usually the most advantageous thing to do. There's not a ton of drinkers. There's not a ton of disposable income, really. And we just felt that it was something that we could represent West Virginia in an extremely positive way and make sure we were making an impact back in the community. So she's sort of synonymous with our journey and what we're trying to create and what we're trying to show the world about the state and what it can do and what we can do if we all work together and support each other, really.
How's she handling the fame? Is she getting a swollen ego or she, a diva.
The problem is, she is. Problem is, she wants more treats. I mean, I don't mind the extra walk, but the treats have kind of gotten out of hand. She's a little more demanding, you know, and so we always joke that per her contract, we have to call her the internationally recognized Lucy Pickles.
It's the trappings of fame. That's what comes with it. Well, good luck with that.
Hey, let's take a break and check out this week's community moment.
So let's talk about something. There's no better way to communicate your story than through video marketing. Whether you want to remember the celebration of a milestone or to reach potential customers for your business, video and photo just can't be beat. At Sparks Productions, we bring years of experience in creative storytelling to your project or event. We learn about you and what's important to you. And really, we just want to create an unforgettable experience with our clients. So give us a call and let Sparks Productions tell your story.
Well, before I wrap up here real quick, can you just give us one last rundown on your products? You've got your ciders, your spirits, and you've also got your infused
cocktails. I'll show you what we've got here. I don't have our new cans. We have some new cans that we're going to be releasing with our cider. We did a new brand refresh and it's really great. I didn't have any, but we've got our RTDs. Those are already drink cocktails. These are vodka sodas. These are black cherry. And we have got a pineapple as well. And then we've got our cider. You guys have maybe seen these on the shelves. And like I said, we've got a new brand refresh. I'm not sure why I don't have the new cans here with me. I don't know what I was thinking, but, and then here's our bottle. We actually have new bottles that we're getting ready to bring out. But Lucy's still going to be on there. She's still going to be the face of the brand, just a little more refined round bottles that these bottles are the same size as the big ones that you see on the shelf, but they look so little. So, there's a glass shortage right now, a national glass shortage.
Oh,
so
imagine that.
I know it's everything else. There's everything, right? So, we are switching bottles. We're switching we did a whole brand refresh to make sure that all of our brands flow across the different product lines that we have so that it's still all the same. And you'll know the brand when you see it from across the room with all of our products. And Lucy's the one that ties them all together.
That's terrific. And where can people find your products at? Are they in the local bars and clubs or are they just in the local retailers? And where can people find your product at, Brooke?
They are in the state of West Virginia. Swill Dog or our cider, you can pretty much find mostly anywhere. We have amazing support. We've gotten some just great, support from the retailers and the entrepreneurs who run these small businesses in West Virginia. They've really gotten behind our brand and have picked us up. The whiskeys and bourbons you can get at liquor stores. And if you can't, and are ready to drink cocktails, these are newer. So these might be a little bit harder to find. So we're trying to get those in a lot of placements. So if you guys know of anyone who wants to pick them up, they can pick them up. The whiskeys and bourbons, you have to order through the state. We're a control state. So you have to order through them. And then our ciders, Mountain State Beverage, if anyone's looking to
order. And so if your local bar or pub or tavern isn't serving those things, you could ask your bartender to say, hey, you guys need to get with your distributor and see if you can get this in here, right?
And that's that is the biggest way that we've been put on shelves is just
right.
Customer
demand.
They're
right.
Like, asking, why do you have Angry Orchard on? You need to put on Swill Dog. I'm like, no, don't take off Angry Orchard. Take off a beer that's not performing or take off.
Yeah.
Something
right.
Else that's
get that Bud Light off air. Yeah.
Yeah. But these are huge. This market is just exploding. And so we need to get these in everywhere for regional placements. People are looking for local for that and they can't find anything besides like High Noon.
Hey, Zach, how many countries are we being listened to in these days? I know you keep track of that stuff.
Somewhere around 17.
Somewhere around 17 countries. Let me ask you this. Do you have the ability to do online sales of any type whatsoever? I know it's alcohol and that's got to be difficult, but I know they do it with wine and various things. Is that a possibility through you guys as well?
So you can with our ciders. We can get it in 38 states. And the reason you can't get it in some of those states is because they've got really good wine lobbyists. Uh-huh. These you cannot get these outside the state, and we've been winning some international awards with that. You mentioned it earlier, and give you guys a little insider tip. I haven't told anybody about it yet, but our barrel strength bourbon just got double gold again at the world's largest competition. So second year in a row.
That is fantastic! Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited.
I love breaking news here.
Don't tell anybody yet.
No,
but it's okay. We're going to share it here soon, but we're absolutely thrilled But the state of West Virginia does not allow us to ship outside the state of West Virginia. Yep. And we are still not able to ship direct to consumer in the state of West Virginia. We have to ship it to a liquor store, and then the liquor store can get it to the person. So that's a little bit different than a lot of other states. But like I said, we're a control state. And since we've won those awards, we've had so many people calling to ask if they could buy our products, and we just have to tell them no. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it's honestly unfortunate. Man.
I know. I've got someone in Colorado yesterday that was like, please, please send it to me. And I'm like, I wish that I could. So it's becoming, you know, and it's like 4 and 5 times a week that people are asking to buy it, and they just, we can't. That's, it limits our business quite a bit.
In due time, you'll get there.
Hopefully we can get that. We could maybe get it changed, but I do understand there's a lot of things on the political side, because there are liquor stores that have paid a lot of money to have access to these products, and they don't want the competition of someone sending direct to consumer. And I completely understand that too. So they've got a business to run as well.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks again for taking time. I don't know if you got anything else, or Aaron.
No, that's it. Nice meeting you, Brooke. I wish you a lot of luck
and nice you
what you're doing.
What you guys are doing. Yeah. I appreciate you guys drawing attention to some really cool things that are happening in West Virginia. It's just awesome to see. And a lot of the stories that you're telling, I'm not aware of. They're not the ones that are getting the big publicity, and they will start, you know.
You nailed it, Brooke. I mean, that's what we're doing here.
They're interesting stories, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
You want to spend your money locally, it's good to know the people that are producing the products locally and producing the jobs and the tax revenue and all this stuff that comes along with, you know, we need to really look at redefining the term small business. I think right now it's something like under 100 employees or 200 employees, some massive number, and very few of us have been in small business will ever have that level of, I think there needs to be another category, because I think that's truly the backbone of small businesses. These truly small businesses, you know, 10, 12, 15, maybe 25 employee kind of businesses. Those are the ones that are like all over the place. So it's good to tell your guys' story.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it a lot. We've got some big news that hopefully in the next, I just got a message on my phone that might be a positive thing about a big announcement we have coming. So,
all right, super.
Sorry I was able to get it in on here. But
all right. And I hope Lucy can maintain some humility. She doesn't get too out there over the top, right?
Belly rubs are getting out of control.
Hey, thanks for sitting in with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Thanks. All right. Bye. Bye-bye.